It is a real joy on Static on 2SER to be joined from London by George Fitzgerald. How's things?
Good, thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to hear from you, and very glad to have the cosmic greatness that is stellar drifting at hand, George. I mean, a stellar drift is, what, the motion of stars? Nothing in space stands still, so did the last couple of years make you think of a bigger picture for this album?
Yeah, I guess it did. I haven't necessarily thought about it in those words, but yeah, I mean, it kind of did for everybody. I think, you know, the last 2-3 years, everyone sitting at home alone, thinking about the big picture in their life and in the world. I started the record a little bit before that, but it's kind of impossible to disentangle it from the pandemic as well, because so much of it was written across that. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of thinking about the bigger things and the bigger picture.
There's nothing like a global pandemic to question your place in the world, huh?
No. There's nothing like a global pandemic just to give you a bit of an existential crisis and make you question everything in your life. And I think this record is really the product of that. So maybe it's about kind of grander themes than some of the last few records I've written.
Well, through Stellar Drifting, there was a desire here to make your music less earthbound. I mean, music should always be exploratory in some way, both in creating sounds and investigating ideas, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was something to do with the idea of the real world getting a little bit smaller and just feeling a little bit smaller. And that's something for me that kind of predated the pandemic. But obviously in the pandemic, that became really, really acute. Just this feeling of everyone's kind of walls closing in and everything. And the record is a pure piece of escapism in the best traditions of dance music. You know, it's written to kind of break through those walls, you know, in your mind. And that's what I was trying to do in the studio on my own, night after night, writing this, was just kind of dream of being somewhere else. And then, you know, obviously the logical thing with that is, well, what's the furthest place you could go to? You know, kind of outer space, the furthest reaches of the universe. So yeah, it's a kind of an escapist fantasy, this whole thing.
And George, you physically changed things up too. You transformed your workspace, I heard. You formed the building blocks of the album from space images and audio from space probes. So you actually did a full tilt into this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the sounds on the record, again, you know, I just had a lot of time on my hands in the studio and just a lot of time to kind of try doing things differently from previous records. And, you know, rather than just kind of like firing up all the same synthesizers that I've made all of my music with for kind of the last 10, 12 years, I just kind of started playing around with, you know, I found out that you could take pictures and load them into synthesizers and create synthesizer oscillators with those. And I just thought that was a really kind of interesting way of linking all the music on this record with that kind of DNA. It was just a way of kind of keeping things interesting and then also just giving the record this like feeling and hidden glue between all of the tracks.
And so, George, what space era is your jam? Is it the classic 60s and 70s Apollo missions or some more recent Brian Cox quantum physics style stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there are things on this record taken from everywhere. I mean, that I was not very discerning. It was kind of been a bit of a magpie across. There's kind of static interference from like radio calls off Apollo missions. And then there's solar wind recordings from probes. But then I think a lot of the kind of synthesizer sounds that I built from images were taken from, you know, like the Hubble archive on NASA, which is like a little bit more recent. So yeah, just like anywhere I could get my hands on this stuff, to be honest, you know, going down weird, like not literally, but wormholes on the internet and just trawling through all of this stuff.
But as we've learned recently, some of them are just pictures of chorizos.
I haven't seen that. What? I missed that. Good. Oh, you've got to tell me about
it. It was a story recently. Some scientists put a picture up of some cosmic galaxy, and then it turned out it was meant as a joke, but it sort of got out of hand. It was just like a close-up of a chorizo.
Do you think I might have made quite a lot of my album with just close-ups of salami then?
That's what I need to worry about. And George, small goods aside, why does electronic music work so well with space themes, do you think? Is it because the music in itself is voyaging to new worlds?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. It definitely seems to be something that people have been preoccupied with from really early on in electronic music. It's like Kraftwerk or the early Detroit pioneers and things like that, Jeff Mills and people like that. I think there must be, you know, something about imagining new ways of creating sounds, which, you know, kind of at the time synthesizers were. And reimagining the way music can be made is quite like a sort of futuristic enterprise. And electronic music constantly does that. It's not a very big leap from there to be interested in outer space and science fiction and those kinds of themes. So yeah, I think there's always been a very, very close link, almost to the point of cliche, you know, electronic producers interested in Blade Runner or Akira or whatever. We're all kind of at it to a certain extent.
I'm kind of happy, though, that it wouldn't work with the blues. I think it is an electronic sphere, that stuff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, maybe also there's something in it that a lot of electronic music kind of started around the same time. I'm speculating here, but it kind of started around the same time as space exploration became a thing. You know, something like the blues predates space exploration, really. But like, I guess as the human race started looking up at the sky and thinking they could go there, you started getting synthesizers and you started getting electronic music. So that's a really interesting thought. I hadn't thought about it that way.
And George, it's always a great reveal about your albums to see which guests you've chosen to work with. They're always pretty diverse. Do the songs that you're making, do they suggest people's voices to you as you go along?
Yeah, sometimes I do. You get a feeling, like you do a sketch or something and you just think, I could really hear this person on it. Like, you know, for instance, on this record, there's a track with Panda Bear. And I just really, really wanted to work with Panda Bear for quite a long time. I was a really big fan of Animal Collective, but especially his solo stuff and things that he'd done with people like Daft Punk or Teebs in the past. And he's just got a different tone to his voice than anyone I've worked with. And so I'm always looking for something kind of new. I think vocalists can reframe your music in a way. And just having that kind of almost like left field Beach Boys thing that he has with his harmonies and everything was just such a pleasure to work with him.
Yeah, Noah's got such a great tone of delivery in what he does. And on the other side of things, you worked with Soak, who lent their vocals to Rainbows and Dreams, and that's quite a gutsy move to chop up Soak's vocals into shards on that song.
Yeah, I mean, they were very cool about it. I was a little bit nervous about what Soak was going to say, because it was quite like a heartfelt song that I kind of took the knife to. And again, you know, Soak is someone with such a sort of individual, unique vocal. You know, it's just sort of unmistakably Soak when you listen to them sing. And so it's just, you know, as a producer, it's just when you work with vocalists like that, it just makes the job so much easier and so much more interesting. And so I'm always trying to find people like that and gravitate towards people like that. And it can take many, many different forms. And, you know, across the three records I've done now, there's a whole kind of swathe or diverse group of vocalists. But I think the thing that links them in my head is that they all have something just a little bit quirky or different. And, you know, Soak very much fits into that mold, as does Panda Bear.
And outside of those vocalists, George, I do want to suggest, I think you dropped the ball on Setting Sun, because with a song called Setting Sun, you really should have called Noel Gallagher to do the vocals.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure whether Noel would have done it, to be honest.
I guess he could have said to you, hey, I've already done that one.
Yeah, he might have just slapped me with a lawsuit, to be honest. But yeah, you know what? I hadn't thought about that. Maybe I should have changed the title of the song.
Look, it is so great to have Stella Drifting out in the universe, as it were. And we might have a listen to another cosmically named song. We'll play Beetlejuice, which that's like a star, right? Some red supergiant star.
Yeah.
But it also has a pop culture double meaning.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you going to have Tim Burton fans coming at you as well?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I kind of wonder whether Beetlejuice, the actual Tim Burton character, was because of this. I haven't looked that up, but I've always thought that that name's really cool. But like, I thought for ages it was like Betelgeuse or something like that. You know, something for another day, maybe.
There's some more exploring for you to do in one way or another.
Yeah, exactly.
Whichever way you want to say it. We might have a listen to Beetlejuice now on Static. Thank you so much for the chat, George.
No problem. Yeah, absolutely.
This is George Fitzgerald on Static.
Cheers.